Welcome to Catholic Sports View on Relevant Radio. A look at the athletes and coaches who shape the Trinity League. Here we go. Exploring where athletics meets faith. Now, here is your host, Bob Gibson.
Thanks again for listening to Catholic Sports View. I am Bob Gibson, and we're going to kick off the show this week with a little bit of breaking news out of Santa Margarita Catholic High School, as they have just announced the hiring of a new girls varsity basketball coach. Christina Ware Marinacci has been hired. She's a USC graduate, also an Orange County product, having spent her high school years at Foothill High School. She has some professional basketball experience as well, and we'll be following this. And of course, we're going to try to get Coach on as soon as possible. It's just been announced. So congratulations to the Eagles. Congratulations to Coach Ware Marinacci. But this week, we're going to focus. We're going to stay right with Santa Margarita, and we're going to talk about their track and field program. It was a big weekend, and we welcome in the co-head coach over at Santa Margarita Catholic High School of the track and field program, and that is Sean Zeitler. Coach, thanks for taking a couple minutes to join us. It was a pretty good weekend for you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was a pretty special weekend. Still kind of funny, just before we got on this phone call, I was watching race videos from Saturday. I'm not ready to let it go just yet.
Is it reliving the happiness, or is it kind of critiquing the what went on? Because I know athletes always do that, right? You know, you're happy in the moment, but you want to go back and you kind of want to see, okay, what could I have done better, even through victory, right?
Oh, totally. It's both. I'll watch it once just for the happiness portion of it, and then I'll go back and I'll watch some handoffs and I'll watch some other things and things that we can fix, because luckily we're fortunate enough to move along quite a few athletes on the Masters this Saturday.
Right. The girls are the Division III champions, 80-19 points, and we'll go through some of the finishers here and how they did. But did you feel going into the meet that your athletes were, you know, kind of ready to do what they did?
Yeah, I mean, truthfully, we felt great. You know, someone else asked me earlier, you know, was I nervous? I'm always nervous before the 4x1, but once that 4x1 is over, we can kind of settle down. We didn't talk to the kids a whole lot about winning the title or anything like that. We put a big premium on going out there, doing your job, execute, have fun, compete with everyone else, and then just see, you know, let the chips fall as they may. So we didn't talk much about winning. The girls did ask a couple times throughout the week, how do you think? Do you think we have a chance? And I didn't want to go in there and say, yeah, we have a chance or anything like that. So just go in there and compete, and we'll see how everything shakes out. Of course, Steve Fryer from the Register came out with an article a day or two before that talked about it, and I was like, uh-oh, hopefully the girls didn't see that article. But no, I was happy with the day. Everyone competed. Everyone did great. And it was the outcome we were hoping for.
I mean, obviously, we're talking about the CIF Southern Section final, and this Southern Section is obviously the biggest section in the state, and encompasses so many right. You know, great athletes. I mean, it's almost at a point where you can't look around you, or you might just stand in awe and watching some of these other great athletes from these other schools compete.
Yeah, it's funny because you're at this meet, and you know, it goes Division 4, 3, 2, 1 in order, go girls and then guys, and you know, we'll finish a race, and it's like I want to run out to the warm up tent and check on the kids, but I'm like, oh, wait, here's Division II, and then, oh, wait, here's Division I. You know, you want to watch these races. Unfortunately, as a coach, you don't really get a chance to, but where you do get a chance to is when you get through the Masters, because that meet is really unbelievable. One heat of each event, the best of the best from all four divisions. So getting there, I mean, even if you don't get there, that's a great meet to go to just to watch.
Sean Zeitler, our guest, the coach of track and field at Santa Margarita Catholic High School. I don't know why I'm stumbling over saying that this morning. I'm having a hard time saying that this morning. And then we've got breaking news out of Santa Margarita, which we hit at the top of the show with the new girls basketball coach. So, I mean, that's great news coming out of the Eagles campus as well. So lots of good news coming out of Santa Margarita these days, but you know, we want to stay focused on this track and field meet here. It was kind of a cool weekend. It wasn't too hot. Are those the kind of conditions you hope for to have out there?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I'm watching, you know, the 10 day and then the 7 day, Channel 4 in the morning, and they're talking lightning, they're talking thunder and rain, and the whole week, you know, being in Santa Margarita, those clouds get stuck right there on the Saddleback Mountains, and you look out and it's sunny everywhere else, but it's cold and cloudy all week. And I told the kids on Friday, I said, hey, look, this is what the weather's supposed to be like on Saturday. We prepared for it. We've been in it all week, so it shouldn't be anything new to us. And then, of course, we get there, and it was absolutely gorgeous. So we couldn't have asked for anything more. Even with Mother's Day the next day, I mean, the whole weekend was beautiful. It was nothing like what the newscaster said it was supposed to be like weather-wise. So we were very lucky. Everybody was very fortunate.
Let's go through a few of the names here. Tessa Green, the 100 and the 200, and, you know, what a season it's been for Tessa. Can you train so that you're at your peak right now?
Well, I sure hope so. That's what they pay us to do.
Yeah.
So if we're not doing that, we're doing something wrong. But, yeah, you know, in terms of, you know, training cycles and speed and strength and all that stuff, you know, we're about 2 weeks into our taper phase, and we're hoping here in the next week or two that we'll see some even faster times. But more than just the training part of it, you get an athlete like Tessa Green. She's a competitor out there. You know, anytime, I mean, if you watch video from that 4x1, she got that baton in about fourth or fifth place. And that was actually, in my opinion, maybe I'm biased, but one of the more exciting races of the day. But, I mean, she mowed down those competitors. I mean, she wasn't going to let anyone beat her. And then the same thing could be said for the 100 and the 200. I mean, all close races. If you get to CIF finals, I don't care what division you're in, you're a talented athlete.
Yeah.
And she showed that she was going to be the class of the field every time she stepped on the track.
It always seems like controlled chaos at a track and field meet, right? There's so much going on in so many different areas. Is it tough as a coach to be able to put your attention everywhere that it needs to be at any given time? How do you schedule your time so that everybody gets the attention they deserve?
Yeah, you know, it really is a 10-ring circus when you go out there and you call it organized chaos. In my opinion, a dual meet has a lot more of that that chaotic factor than if you go to an invitational. Invitational, you're not the one necessarily, you're not the meet director. All you have to worry about are your own athletes. And so, you know, week leading up to a meet, we will put together the time schedule, and then we'll put together next to the time schedule warm-up times. And then just as the meet goes on, you go to the meet schedule, you see if they're behind, you see if they're ahead, and then you group text the athletes and say, hey, they're 12 minutes behind, you know, add 12 on to the warm-up time and get yourself ready to go.
Lauren Memoli, 55:33 in the 400 meter. We're talking about the sprints, and then we've got the middle distance kind of runners. Do the conditions favor one athlete over the other?
Well, you know, the warmer it gets, the more it's going to favor your sprinters. The colder it gets, those distance people are just licking their chops. So, frankly, I mean, I don't think it topped more than 74, 75, which really is ideal for anybody. You know, you get up to the state meet up there in Clovis, and you'll get a miler, 2 miler that, you know, it might be doubling into, you know, 103 degrees. That is not optimal, you know. But, you know, the sprinters, they can handle it. And like I said, I mean, the weather was perfect, in my opinion, for just about any event that was going on Saturday. Even the way El Camino College is set up is perfect with the wind going into the disc. You really couldn't ask for much more this past Saturday.
You mentioned the 4x100, 4x400, all first place victories. How does it build within it? Obviously, when the team sees others doing well, does that just build within the team aspect as well? Because, you know, we talk about, you know, track being an individual event, and then you get the team aspect of it too in the relays. But even within that, you know, is it just kind of building within the team once you start seeing those victories happening and it just gets the ball rolling?
At our school, I can't speak for anybody else, but at our school, we put a huge premium on team over individual. And so we'll sit down a couple days before each meet, you know, whether it's a dual meet or an invitational, and we'll have a varsity meeting, and we'll just talk about expectations for each athlete. And in all these meetings, you always say, focus on yourself, focus on your event, and that's where the individual part of it is. And then all those things are going to come together from a team standpoint. So we're a bunch of collective individuals working together as a team. And our program loves it. The kids that come through, we always want to make sure that we're taking care of our individuals, but we're doing that with a team goal in mind.
There is, of course, a state championship meet coming up, but in the middle of that is the master. Explain to people who maybe don't know what this master's meet is.
Masters is the best of the best, kind of the cream of the crop. So, from a southern section standpoint, you've got your four divisions, and for your lane races, it's comprised of the 9 best athletes from all 4 divisions. Last Saturday are all going to be thrown into one heat on Saturday at the Masters meet. Now, if you're a field event athlete or distance, they take the top 12. So, I mean, it really is. So you talked about, you know, with so much going on at CIF finals, you don't really get a chance to watch everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is basically going to be the highlight mix of everything that happened last Saturday, and you're going to get a chance to watch it at Masters.
Right, and I think for people to know, this is really the fun meet, I think, because you're right. This is everybody together, regardless of division. Now we really know who are the best people, right? Because you say, oh, well, you're Division 3, you're Division... No, it doesn't matter now, right? Everybody get in there, and you're going to run, and we're really going to find out, as you mentioned, the best of the best are. Is this maybe the most fun for the athletes?
I know when I was an athlete, it was always my favorite. As a coach, it's also my favorite. It's a blessing and a curse to be in such a large division, and a lot of people will go from their sectional meet straight to state. And, of course, because we are so large, we have to have this meet. And the blessing is that we get to watch one of the premier track and field meets, in my opinion, probably in the country. And then, of course, everybody that makes it out of there will go on to state. But, yeah, this meet is really – it's pretty spectacular. Even if you – you don't have an athlete in, you're not a coach, you're just a track junkie or somebody who loves the sport. It's a quick meet, about 3 hours. Sit down, get your popcorn ready, and watch some of the best athletes in the Southern Section.
And then, obviously, you'll take these athletes up north to compete at the state level, which, not every sport has a state championship. Most, and they're trying to, I think, rectify that and get state championships in most sports that they can. But, really, that's something as well, to be able to say, hey, maybe for an athlete to say I was a CIF champion, and then maybe eventually a state champion as well. That means something.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, not everyone gets the opportunity to get this far. We certainly, our goal now, we've accomplished our preseason goal, which is, repeat as CIF champions. And now this is the point where it's, all right, hey, this is the icing on the cake. We're playing with the house's money at this point. Let's go out there, compete to the best of our ability, and try to get to Clovis. That's the end goal now at this point.
Obviously, the Trinity League as a whole, if you take a look at the entire league, did very well here. Orange Lutheran finished in second to you. Modern Day did well in the D1 level as well. Do you get a chance out of the corner of your eye to watch some of your fellow league competitors as well?
Yeah, So Olu was literally in the corner of our eye.
Yeah, right. True.
Next to theirs. But I'm so happy for Coach Davis and everybody from Orange Lutheran. He's done an incredible job over there. I just kind of look around and in the camps and the warm up areas, and he's done an incredible job from a team chemistry standpoint. So I'm very happy for those girls. And then Coach Martinez, obviously, he's been there before a number of times. Very happy for him, for his boys and how they rallied. But it's really no surprise to see, Coach Martinez and Modern Day holding the plaque at the end of CIF Finals. So
yeah.
Proud of all those guys. It was pretty cool. We were all kind of sitting out there waiting to be allowed in for the awards presentation. And then I was like, oh, hey, there's Ricky from Modern Day. Oh, wait, there's Marvin from Olu. And then, Chase Frazier, Mission Viejo. And it's like, oh, my gosh, this is like, OC Championships all over again. With a bunch of buddies at the end of an awesome meet. So really happy for all those guys that got to bring home the hardware.
Was there a chance for, obviously, you talk with your athletes at the end, everybody's happy. Was there a chance as a coaching staff to kind of debrief a little bit and kind of celebrate it as well?
Yeah, I think the debriefing's still kind of going on. It's funny because Saturday, by the time we got out of there, it's 8-something and got to go get something to eat. We want to talk. But at the same time, I know myself and my dad, we were pretty physically and emotionally drained by the whole thing. And then get to bed late because you're watching videos and then you wake up the next day and it's Mother's Day and my daughter's 6th birthday. And I'm like, oh my gosh, please, I can't do that. So we're still catching up, but we're still talking about it and still enjoying the moment.
Real life comes back into play as well, right?
No, it sure does. When I'm taking them to the grocery store and all I want to do is take a nap, but it's the right thing to do.
And I think I said Modern Day actually took first in the boys D2 4x100. We want to mention that. And of course, Peter Harold from Jay Sarah, who we had on the show. No surprise there in D3, the 1600 and the 3200. Peter's had a great year for Jay Sarah.
Special shout out to Coach Dugard and the Jay Sarah Lions. Getting third place with those two guys and Anthony. I mean, Peter Harold is a beast, obviously.
Yeah.
But seeing Anthony Grover tripling
Grover
like this throughout the year is pretty unreal. Pretty special talent.
What a great meet and what a great finish for so many in the Trinity, but obviously a fabulous day for Santa Margarita and the Eagles. Coach, we want to thank you. Congratulations again. Good luck at the Masters. We'll be following you there and, of course, at the state meet later on. And we appreciate the time. Good luck. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much for having me. Take care.
All right, that's Sean Zeitler, head coach over at Santa Margarita Catholic High School track and field. Much more to come right here on the show. We'll be right back. You're listening to Relevant Radio.
Timmery here from Trending with Timmery. Be sure to join us this week as we're talking about Alyssa Milano's sex strike, Representative Brian Sims, and maybe kind of packing away why he has been so hateful toward a pro-life woman who remains silent and two teenagers who are praying in front of the abortion clinic. Make sure to join me for that and more on Trending this Sunday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, here on Relevant Radio.
This is John Romero, Director of Music at Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. We are just months away from the dedication of our beautiful cathedral, but in the meantime, we have some spectacular concerts at Christ Cathedral. Check out our website at ChristCathedralMusic.org or our Facebook page at Christ Cathedral Music. We'd love to see you here.
Christ Cathedral Concerts, great music in a sacred place. For tickets, visit ChristCathedralMusic.org.
Welcome back to Catholic Sports View here on Relevant Radio. We welcome in our friend, now the Hall of Famer, Eric Sonheimer, congratulations. Now part of the L.A. City Section Hall of Fame. That banquet happened just a couple of weeks ago. Quite an honor for you.
Yeah, me and Gail Goodrich together, if you can believe that. I didn't make any baskets of Pauly. He made a lot more.
Vince Ferragamo, Anthony Davis, Don Buford, among the honorees of that night. And gosh, when you look at the, I looked at the program, I thought, oh my, look at the names that are in this Hall of Fame. All the people that have been part of the City Section. I mean, it's probably the most prestigious, I would guess, in the nation.
I would think so, because there were so many great individuals, and you have to remember the people went to the City Section 20 years ago. That was the primary school. They didn't go to private schools. They went to the public school in their neighborhood. And LA Unified really was on a roll there, but things certainly have changed. But certainly the history of the City Section is very strong.
Yeah, without a doubt. Still alive and well, and your name forever enshrined with all those other greats. Well-deserved. Congratulations again.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned in your acceptance speech, hey, the job is still at hand for you and for all of us as we kind of wrap up this school year as things wind down. It's been a very interesting spring season, as seems to always been. I kind of want to hit on a lot of different topics with you, but I think one of the first things is Dodger Stadium is going to host the Southern Section Baseball Championships again. And on Twitter a while back, you said, hey, that kids would rather play at Dodger Stadium than play for a state championship. And I thought that was an interesting, and I kind of went back and forth on that, but I think maybe you're right on that. It really means something to be able to play in a big league stadium like these kids are going to be able to do.
It really does. I mean, they're going to remember that far more than winning a state championship. The City Section has been very fortunate. They've had the finals there for 51 straight years. So I'm just concerned because they have a certain time that you have to get finish your playoffs, that it might affect that, because Dodger Stadium, of course, is only available when the Dodgers are out of town. The City Section informs me that they will just move their schedule around that, which I hope they understand is very important, because if I ever see the chance of them missing out on that, I will be first to criticize, because I guarantee you the kids want to play at Dodger Stadium, and the current proposal for state is to have a regional format kind of like soccer, and I really don't see that as an impact moment for high school kids at the end of the year when they're graduating. Most of them, some of them want to get on to their pro and college career, so it'll be an interesting situation.
Yeah, you know, we've seen the last couple of seasons where some Southern Section teams have gotten together, especially a lot of the Orange County teams, and played kind of a one-off thing at Angel Stadium. I don't know how well-received that has necessarily been. I've noticed some really low crowds at some of those games, but to play for a championship, and maybe it's just because it's Dodger Stadium. I mean, it's just the history that has happened, you know, within that stadium. I think it's special to the Southern Section athletes to be able to do it. I wish everybody could do it, and it's only Divisions 1, 2, and 3. I wish everybody had a chance to play their championship game there.
Yeah, for sure. And the Dodgers are a little different than the Angels. They open up the dugouts and everything else. They're really the bullpens. Angels, they give you a certain amount of time you can actually be on the field. Yeah. Dodger Stadium is far more easy. And of course, you have the Dodger dogs. Everybody wants a Dodger dog.
It's all part of the experience.
The press box, however.
Yeah, right. I might send some up to the press box. We want some of those as well, right?
Yes, my friend Randy Rosenblum, we have a competition to see how many you can eat in a certain amount of time.
If you put chicken in front of Randy, then it would be all disappeared, you know, as we know.
Yes, definitely.
As we wind down the season, obviously it's crazy. I mean, we talk about, and now we're going to get into the transfers, and of course, football's going to be on the docket here, as it always seems to be, all season long. And I know you've talked about it a lot as well, but the transfer situations, you know, we don't see as much of it. Certainly in baseball, in the spring sports, we don't see it. It seems to have wind down a little bit in basketball and even in football, but it's more alive and well in football than ever, I think. Do you feel like things are calming down on that front, or is it just getting more and more crazy, continuing to be the Wild West out there?
No, it's really not calming down. I think you can always go into every season in football and basketball and take a look. There's one way to figure out who will win a state title or who will win a Division I title. That's based on transfers. You cannot win, in my opinion, any of those divisions without a certain amount of transfers of high quality. It's just the way it is at the highest level, and it's going to stay that way. Yes, the transfers are down about 1,000 in the Southern Section this year, but it's done that every 3 or 4 years. Talking to Tom Simmons, the spokesperson for the southern section. He says that happened, but nothing has really changed. But in September, there's going to be a proposal from a committee that was put together, and they're supposed to come up with some ideas of how to deal with the transfers. I will be interested to see if one proposal gets proposed, and that would be to move the sit-out period when you transfer without moving from the beginning of the year. You have to sit out about a month to the end of the year. That would end the possibility of coaches influencing kids to come over to win a championship because you wouldn't get a chance to play in the playoff. Of course, that would cause some other issues. Would a coach want to play somebody who would not be available in the playoff during the early season? So that's a possibility. I don't know if it has the support yet, but I definitely think it should be a proposal because if that comes on board, then we would know that coaches would be not able to influence kids trying to get them over to help win a championship.
Right. It's always been sort of a wink-wink to the teams. We don't recruit. We don't go out. But, you know, it's happening. It's, you know, kind of across the board. And as you mentioned, you have to do it now. If you're going to compete, are we better off just kind of pulling back the curtain and just saying, hey, you know, it is what it is. And if coaches want to get out there and get the best, you know, athletes they can into their school, so be it.
It's still an education-based high school sports experience. So I don't think that that's going to be possible if we want to keep it that way. Of course, we're also make-believe land that nothing of this is happening. So it's a difficult situation. I've noticed that some of the private schools are pulling back a little bit. They understand that if you really want to do this, you have to commit. You have to give freebies, and it's not great for everybody else. So maybe that's the way to go. I know that Modern Day was embarrassed when two players that they let in transfer at the beginning of the semester ended up leaving and had a press conference, or not a press conference, they signed their letters of intent at their former school. So that was not a positive experience for them. So they still are taking transfers in. So I don't think that's prevented that from happening, but maybe it's given some people second thoughts on that idea of bringing in somebody in for 6 months, when usually high school is supposed to be preparing them for the future, not just for sports.
No, it's so true. I mean, we talk about the term student athlete, you know, which at the collegiate level, everybody kind of chuckles at. But as we know, things kind of trickle down from the college to the high school level. And I get the feeling that we're starting to have people chuckle at the notion of student athlete, even at the high school level. And it should never be that way. I mean, this is where kids get that basis and that education to move on to college. Now, if you're one of the 0.5% or 1% of kids that eventually get to be a professional athlete, we know it's a very small number, then great. Maybe you're preparing for that, but for most of these kids, the vast majority, the chance to get a college scholarship and get an education, you know, means everything. And that's still, you know, one of the big reasons to compete in athletics.
Right. And so many just want the experience. Again, that go back to Dodger Stadium. How many of these kids playing will ever get another chance to play there? That's the point of these experiences. I'm just warning you, though, in June, it's going to be the Wild, Wild West. There's going to be lots of movement. Some of the people who learned in spring football practice are not going to be starters, are going to bail out. And so you'll see, again, the movement of athletes. And I'm just going to roll my eyes and see where things end up. It's very hard to kind of make predictions at this point on teams because I need to see where they're going to end up. And you have to prepare. This is going to be the year of the circus in basketball. Bronny James is going to be a freshman. And right now he's at Crossroads. Will he stay there? So far, it looks like he is. And if you thought that Chino Hills was a circus with the Ball brothers, right. Wait till Bronny James makes his debut. I'm predicting helicopters and media circus galore.
And I just wonder, all the reports about LeBron James, you know, he seems to be a good father. He's got his, you know, his kid's best interest, I think, at heart. But he's got to know deep down, too, because there was a circus around him as a high school athlete as well. He's got to know kind of maybe a better idea how to navigate this, I think, for his kid as well, right?
I would hope so. If he keeps him at Crossroads, then I would be very confident that that's exactly what he's doing. If he ends up sending him to a higher profile school, then I would have some concerns about that. But Crossroads, they know how to deal with this. They had Shaquille O'Neal's sons there and daughter, so they know how to deal with these high profile things. And they could be successful. They won a championship when Shaquille O'Neal was there. So I'm going to be curious to see how it goes. They wouldn't allow media to film him as an eighth grader. But I got to see him in his first game, and he truly is an exceptional player for his age. I think he ranks up there even better than LaMelo Ball was as a freshman, and he did a pretty good job then. So it's going to be interesting to say, of course, the Lakers could always trade LeBron away, and then who knows where he'll end up, but I don't think that's going to happen. So I'm just hoping it doesn't get too crazy, but the first game definitely will be crazy. I'm confident of that to say.
No doubt about that. We're visiting with Eric Sonheimer from the LA Times. One of the topics I really wanted to hit with you, because it's something that it concerns me, and I want to ask you if it's a concern of yours, is that, you cover the Southern section and the LA City section. In the Southern section, especially in football, we're pretty much down to Mater Dei and Bosco every year, it seems like, in the open division. I know Centennial is certainly a force in there and has a chance, but I mean, we've been down to Mater Dei and Bosco for the last several years. Same thing in the City section. Narbonne, far and away, the best team in the City section. I don't think there's anybody you could even argue can touch Narbonne, and they just got in some transfer athletes. A kid from Mater Dei decided now to go to Narbonne. There's a transfer the other way of what you would think. Is this a concern to you that we're kind of just down to one or two teams in each section that are dominating things?
Do you think that I already know who's going to play in the finals and before, and I have to watch the regular season and again, wink my eyes and knowing what the ending is going to be?
Right.
Yes, it's definitely, especially in the City section. I mean, Narbonne is going to have one of its better teams, and it's all battling for second place. I mean, there's no competition. I mean, that's not fun. People want to compete. And I feel for the other coaches, you really have to sell your kids when you play these teams on opportunity just to test yourself rather than try to win the game, because it's just not going to happen. No, Centennial, I would say it's a three-team race always between Mater Dei, Bosco, and Centennial, the way things are going. And nothing is really changing, and that's why in the Southern section there's discussion of making Division One an open division or dropping it a little better or making some changes, because last year the opening round was not very competitive. And so there's real concerns about the competitive level in that. So I don't know what they're going to do. I do think that changes need to happen in Division One. Attendance is down for everybody, and maybe that's going to continue because people just don't want to come and see a wipeout. I mean, I go cover a game. I don't want to go and see a running clock game, but Narbonne's going to have a couple running clock games.
Oh, and more than a couple, right.
They're deciding whether they should drop from 8 to 14 in the open division. And so, yeah. But that's what's happening right now. Parents want to get their kids to the top-level teams. I guess they don't believe that if you're good that they'll find you elsewhere, which is true, but that seems to be happening. And that's why I would be very optimistic about supporting a sit-out period where it comes at the end of the year to prevent these people from moving just to win a championship.
Well, Eric, we want to thank you for coming in and joining us. Always fun to talk with you, and we'll catch up with you again soon. Because as we know, it's never not football season these days. It's always football season.
Yes, I'll be going to a passing league game probably this Saturday. Thank you.
Absolutely. I want to thank my guests this week, Sean Zeiler over at Santa Margarita Catholic High School, and of course, the prep sports writer at the LA Times, our good friend Eric Sonheimer. If you want to contact us here, it's CatholicSportsView@gmail.com, and of course, we are active on Twitter as well. If you are, you can go ahead and follow us at CatholicSV. That's at CatholicSV. I want to thank you once again for joining us. Have a great rest of your weekend. This is Catholic Sports View, where athletics meets faith. So long.
You've been listening to Catholic Sports View on Relevant Radio, exploring where athletics meets faith. Spread the word about our broadcast, and we'll catch up with you again next week at this same time on Relevant Radio.
My name is Nick Jordan. I'm the founder of Wells of Life. I'm here to tell you that there are 10 million people in Uganda without access to clean water. Imagine your water comes from a stream or pond shared with animals. Imagine that this water is loaded with parasites and disease. Each day you have to walk 3 miles to fetch this because it's all the water there is. So what can you do about this? The great news is you can do a lot. Go to wellsoflife.net and make a personal donation. Talk to your family, church, or company about funding your own well. Every penny goes to fund your well and will bring water and life to as many as 1,000 parishioners in rural Uganda for up to 20 years. Go to wellsoflife.net and make a personal donation. Wellsoflife.net.